Begin with the end in mind. That's what Stephen Covey told us more than 20 years ago. I remember the first time I heard the concept. I was in my college economics class, and our professor was reading from Covey's book. I was trying to act all intelligent and cerebral over this first habit of highly effective people. I pursed my lips, adjusted the huge padded shoulders on my jacket, and ran my fingers through my big Texas hair, trying very hard to look thoughtful and contemplative. I'm afraid I only succeeded in looking like a Dallas Cowboys cheerleader who had been told that all Paul Mitchell hairspray products had been recalled for being environmentally unsafe. In other words, I tried to understand, but I clearly didn't have a clue. Begin with the end in mind? What in the wide world of sports did that mean? How can you get all the way to the end first? How do you know where to begin? Eventually, the professor's assistant explained it all to me, using small words and drawing pictures. I learned to imagine the end goal and then take the steps needed to get there. Once you know what's at the other end of the journey, you're more likely to arrive. Even a very young, big-haired Texas woman living in the overstimulated 80s could learn that concept. My end has always been about people. I was a born saver, but also a born giver. I made my parents so mad when I gave away my dolls and fundraising candy bars. I wanted to give everything I could to help people reach their own end. But I had to learn the best way to give. So, this first section is all about the big give. How to do it smart, how to want to do it, and how to do it in a way that allows you and others to prosper in the process. This first section, the idea of giving your first 10%, is what sets apart the average from the super above average folks. How many givers do you know who are perpetually poor? Not many. You'll find out how giving can bring out the superhero in you. When Mr. and Ms. America give, the sky's the limit. In short, give and you'll be rich. I'll show you how. That's the end we're looking toward, so that's where we'll begin. Chapter 1. Little Miss Giver. Giving it away will make you rich. If you want to live rich, then you give what you can and start where you are. Ellie Kay. One of our favorite movies is Three Amigos, which features a set of actors in the 1930s who are down on their luck. They end up in Mexico with a situation of mistaken identity. Steve Martin, Lucky Day, Chevy Chase, Dusty Bottoms, and Martin Short, Ned Niederlander, deliver some of the best comedic performances of their careers. At the beginning of the movie, they get a telegram from a poor village in Santa Poco asking them to come rescue them from the villain El Guapo. Lucky Day, reading telegram. Three amigos, Hollywood, California. You are very great. 100,000 pesos. Come to Santa Poco, put on show. Stop. The infamous El Guapo. Dusty Bottoms. What does that mean? Infamous. Ned Niederlander. Oh, Dusty, infamous is when you're more than famous. This man, El Guapo, he's not just famous, he's infamous. Lucky Day. 100,000 pesos to perform with this El Guapo, who's probably the biggest actor to come out of Mexico. Dusty Bottoms. Wow. Infamous? Infamous? Wouldn't each of us like to be famous for something? When I was 7 years old, I ended up as the infamous money kid at Atwood Elementary School in Fort Worth, Texas. It all started one morning when I poured cereal into my bowl and out of the box popped destiny in the form of a hand buzzer. You wound up the buzzer, hit it, and when you shook someone's hand, you buzzed them. I was delighted with the potential this incredible prize held and debated shaking my mom's hand. Then I thought about the new paddle ball my brother had just gotten from our grandma and the fact that as soon as the string broke, Mom would use the paddle for another reason. I decided against buzzing her. Instead, I used that novelty item to set up my first business. Before school, at recess, and after school, I set up Ellie's Electrifying Handshakes. Girls could get buzzed for a nickel, and boys could get a shock for only 15 cents. I charged the boys more because of the cootie factor. I felt I should be compensated for the risk of catching those conspicuous cooties. My marketing plan included two-for-one deals and frequent buyer programs. When these tactics didn't work, I had a secret weapon, the double dog dare for the kids who were afraid of the shock. That one worked every time. These marketing techniques were so successful that in only 2 weeks, I made $10. That was a lot of handshakes. I stored my stash in a little plastic butter bowl filled with nickels and dimes. When I proudly showed my mom my buzz stash, she smiled and said, "Great job. You need to know that $1 of that $10 goes in the offering plate on Sunday morning." "What?" I thought. "I can't keep all my money. I gotta give some away, but it's mine." That was my first introduction to the idea of a tithe, or 10% that goes out as a gift. I remember Mrs. Rickards, my Sunday school teacher, telling us that our offerings were going to children in Africa. Even though I didn't like the idea of having to give away my own money, I did like the idea of trying to help those kids. That next Sunday, in the 7-year-old's classroom, Mrs. Rickards passed a shiny gold plate with red felt in the center. The other kids dropped in nickels, dimes, and a few quarters. When the plate was handed to me, I proudly put in my hard-earned dollar bill.